We're going to start with our first presenter. Our first presenter is Jess Peterson. He's the current president of the Western Sky Strategies and represents the United States Cattlemen's Association as its executive vice president. Peterson and the staff, the WSS staff, provide U.S. Cattlemen's Association full-time presence in Washington, D.C., naturally conveys the interests of the U.S. Cattlemen's Association to policymakers. Peterson also serves as a spokesperson for the U.S. Cattle Association, frequently appears on national media forums, industry panels regarding the interests of the members, ranchers, and farmers. As a fifth-generation rancher and Montana native, Jess Peterson is familiar with concerns of full-time ranching. For the past 7 years, Peterson has successfully represented the interests of thousands of U.S. cattle producers on Capitol Hill and inside the administration to ensure the industry maintains a competitive edge. Jess understands the needs and listens to the voice of the countryside and maintain a biweekly horn wrap conference call to facilitate the active dialogue on issues affecting U.S. cattle industry. Mr. Peterson also manages the cow-calf operation near Mile City, Montana, continually plays an active role in management of ranching operations, keeps Peterson aware of the needs and importance of American agriculture in the strong rural communities. Peterson is a proud alumnus of Miles Community College at Mile City, Montana, and Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. Peterson also was recently recognized as one of the cattle Business's weekly top 10 industry leaders under 40 and is named as the Livestock Markets Digest 25 individuals that have made a difference in the American livestock industry. You know, it's also named as one of Washingtonian magazine's 40 under 40 lobbyists. With that, I'll turn it over to Jeff. And
note to self, decrease the time on my bio. Wait, we live? Hey, good morning, everyone. Jess Peterson, great to be with you. A big, big thank you to the Western Extension Committee for putting this together, and a big thank you for all the participants out there, whether you're in ag production or communications and outreach and education ag production. A big, big thank you for all that you do. Really excited to be here. We'll get started here. I want to first give you a brief overview of the issues that I'll be talking about. And then we'll dive into them a little deeper, and then open it up for Q&A. So first out of the chutes, labeling, country of origin labeling, big issue. And then also, a lot of you have been following this too, the GMO debate. Follow up, we'll talk a little bit about the farm bill, the upcoming farm bill, and the current discussions that are underway, along with the Endangered Species Act. I think there's been some incredible victories with regards to conservation and species and habitat and mitigation measures and all the above. Along with, especially going with today's theme, the cattle market, trends, transparency, and trade. So we're going to talk about all that, so let's get started here. Country of origin labeling, there's a lot of slides there, and just it gives you a full chronology of everything that's happening there with regards to that law. I'm going to pull myself away from the emotion of working that law for a long time and talk just directly from some feedback, and that is... You know, it's been unique, no matter how you look at the country of origin discussion, how it came under, you know, under a law with regards to the Farm Bill, Department of Agriculture, how that was written into shape, then along with the WTO and how that case played out. And I think there was a lot learned from that with regards to how lawmaking, rulemaking, and how it's implemented. So win, lose, or draw, and all that played out, you still see that process and what we learned from it. It still remains. What started country of origin labeling and where it's at today, there is an interest from the consumers to know where their food is produced. And as we see, especially spending time here in D.C. and in various urban parts of the country and travels, the consumer is always wanting to know more, not less, about their food. So from that perspective, it remains an interest from U.S. cattlemen and others is how do you create that definition for the product. And what happened is, at the end of the year last year, obviously with the WTO tariffs looming, there was some discussion about, you know, how do we get rid of this, you know, repeal the law. So the one frame of mind was to repeal the law entirely. The other frame of mind, which the U.S. Cattlemen's and others supported, was, you know, go about it in a voluntary fashion that would be WTO compliant, but in doing so, you would allow for a prescriptive label vis-a-vis a voluntary process. So in other words, if retailers wanted that label, they could. There was a definition set forth in a statute for to do that. What we instead saw was just a blanket repeal. And so now what happens, and you'll see this reference here on December 21st, it goes back to now FSIS is in charge of what small role they've had in it previously, which was a lot of more tied to food safety and import. So what you have right now is a little bit of confusion is, well, is FSIS going to provide those definitions? Congress didn't do that. AMS, Agriculture Marketing Service, is completely out of the equation. So as you walk into a grocery store now, and again, I'll use the example here in the nation's capital, some of them you'll see the placard above the meat counter, but on there's no labels, or the labels are gone on the actual product. Other places you can walk in and see the labeling like the cool law has never been repealed. Well, which is it? Are those labels on there accurate? And where do you work from? So from our perspective, and you see all the headlines, well, there's a lack of information. So regardless of where you're at on the country of origin labeling debate, and I want to make another quick point, too, what we learned from it. A lot of folks said, oh, we came close to a trade war and this, that, and the other thing. You know, anytime you look at these WTO cases, we're always going back and forth in negotiation. And quite honestly, it was a pretty hearty, healthy debate. We spent a lot of time talking to the Canadians throughout the process. I think folks might have played it up a little bit more. There's always a back and forth in these trade agreements. I mean, that's a big part of what they are. So, you know, obviously didn't want to have tariffs come into place, but certainly there was always a plan to work out to get a successful outcome there. And so now where we're at, though, is there is this confusion in the marketplace. And as we know, consumers will consistently ask for information on their product. Look no further than the GMO debate. And no doubt if you were to talk to the folks involved in the GMO debate and ask them to rewind 10 years, would they look to be proactive in how they were addressing this GMO information outreach to the consumers? And no doubt any one of them would say, yeah, we probably should have taken a slightly more proactive approach. So fast forward, current setting, you have the states putting forth some very strenuous, quite frankly, outrageous concepts for how labeling would move forward. I shouldn't say outrageous, but more unworkable. So you have a very unworkable, difficult lineup in which, you know, from a general perspective, it's really hard to meet those specs. However, now the fact that there isn't, they've been having discussions, they have not been able to pass a uniform labeling law. From a GMO perspective, you see the folks that say, we have it in the states, and they've put pressure on Stabenow and the Democrats to say, well, if we have it in the states, we better get something that supersedes it. If this national law is going to supersede what we want, what we have, we better get a lot out of it. And there you see the ranking member of the Ag Committee, Senator Stabenow, and her comments. On the flip side, you see Chairman of the Ag Committee, Pat Roberts, say, look, this is unworkable. It's, you know, it's states dictating every state across the region, across the board as to what's going to happen. So so from this perspective, you're seeing this thing play out. I don't have a crystal ball. This is not my wheelhouse directly with regards to GMO labeling. The only reason I use it as a reference is to compare the fact that you have, you know, consumers are wanting to seek this information, and how do we, the industry, go about informing them, and what policies do we put together, and how do we, we agree to disagree. That's always going to be the spirit of what we work on here in the nation's capital on policy, but how can we, at the end of the day, work through some of these disagreements to make sure that production agriculture is getting a win. So, you know, keep you posted on that, and keep looking at this country of origin labeling. There is a question mark there that needs to be addressed, and certainly as this plays out with on the GMO labeling front will be unique for all your folks, and when you talk about managing in uncertain times. One of the things that we've talked about, and I'll reference this a little bit, and that is, you know, it's an election year, it's an election cycle. So no surprise, you get a lot of angry rhetoric against Washington and all the above. And I want to talk just a little bit about a very positive piece, and that's conservation as it links to the Farm Bill. So first off, just talk a little bit about this upcoming Farm Bill, building off the current successes. I'm going to just pull a couple of these out here, Some of them are tied to U.S. cattlemen's priority issues. Others are tied to some stuff that I really think, if since we have this great group here, we need to keep talking about these. And I can tell you they're a unique success story, and we need to build on these successes. So I really want to make sure I emphasize that. Conservation, you all know these programs. A lot of you are helping making them a success story, so I thank you for that. We were just meeting with Chief Weller last week and walking through some of this and how we can build on it. The CSP, the EQIP, the RCPP, these have been extremely positive for livestock production, the environment and wildlife habitat, and especially, and I'll get into this a little bit, in this threatened and endangered species. Crop insurance, there were some debates on, you know, there's always this discussion of cuts on crop insurance. The last farm bill saw a linkage of conservation compliance in crop insurance. There was some kickback on that, and I understand folks in the countryside and their frustration, but what I would respond with is that, you know, by linking conservation compliance to crop insurance, there was an ally built within agriculture, which was the environmental community and conservation groups. And as you continue to battle, or we in agriculture battle for another farm bill, it's good to get a bigger tent for agriculture. So look at that as a success story, too, that when push came to shove, we needed another ally to move this farm bill forward. I'll give, and this is, you know, I'm a Montana cowboy, I'll give the environmental community, along with the hook and bullet, your sportsmen and anglers, I'll give them a credit for delivering on their promise, saying, hey, if you make these changes, we'll back your play. And so, again, just keep that in mind as these discussions on crop insurance and ties to conservation compliance and discussions for the upcoming farm bill. Livestock title, that was in the 2008. COOL was not, yeah, it wasn't, so I won't get ahead of myself. It was in the 2008 Farm Bill, was not in the last Farm Bill. From U.S. Cattlemen's perspective, we will be talking about an upcoming livestock title. Again, real quick, touching back on the success, I'll go to the right side of the slide here, producer-driven partnerships, the Sage-Grouse Initiative. You look at, if you were to turn on the debates, you'd think that just everything is broken in Washington. Well, I'm not at all going to be the one that's going to defend Washington at all, but I will say the private-public partnerships that have been put together by both parties on both sides, so both sides of the aisle, by your producer groups, by your environmental folks, your conservation folks, all came together. And when, you know, the phrase, what's good for the bird is good for the herd. I mean, we heard that from the conservation environmental community, and we didn't know how hard they'd come to play in that and defend the efforts, defend the conservation. You all know the programs that ranchers stepped up and did. And I got to tell you, it was incredible the last 2 years to ward off this listing for the sage grouse. It was absolutely incredible to see that community say, no, I appreciate what ranchers are doing. We're standing with them, and it made a big difference. It made a big difference. I won't use the phrase, it made a huge difference. We don't need to go there, but it made a big difference with regards to that. So, again, I think we need to build on that. Anytime you look at the paper, your Ag News, you can see the Northwest, there's another set of listings. Now there's discussions on the Monarch, the President's Bee Initiative, so the pollinator discussion. We need to consistently look at that in the ag community. How can we show, whether it's row crop farming, any version of livestock production, what are we doing to enhance the wildlife mitigation, endangered species mitigation efforts, habitat restoration and mitigation, and so all the above, but really looking at it, and I want to put an emphasis on that. I don't think we've talked enough about that success story, and so I'm really, really pleased and proud of what we have there, and we need to build. We need to build on that in the upcoming Farm Bill. Moving over to the markets, and that actually is Leo McDonald there in the middle, along with a group of respected folks tied to the cattle industry, along with a group of our folks in front of the Capitol here a few years back. And Leo McDonald testified this past year, last July, regarding the country boards and labeling. And so I have Leo there, but then below I have a quote that we use a lot around here, the U.S. Cattlemen's, and I think anyone involved in cattle production, certainly with regards to the theme of what we're talking about here today, a great phrase, markets operate best with informed and active participants. Markets operate best with informed and active participants. You just can't say that enough. And so we look at the fact, historically, where we're at with our cattle prices. You see, obviously a pretty big dip that took place here from March of 2015 to this past March of 2016. So no doubt a little bit of volatility out there. What does that mean? From our perspective, we believe, we're not here to point fingers at anyone, we just believe that first off you need to have a modernized set of rules that you're working with, whether it's Packers and Stockyards Act, price reporting, and what are we doing with the data? The data that we're gathering, is it the most useful? So a few steps here. Changes in CME trading. We spent a lot of time, folks probably saw this, the discussions with CME. Did they have a role? Could they help or hurt what was going on with the market crash? You can call it whatever, but the numbers that, as we saw the market drop last year, last fall. And so we've had good discussions with CME. I think that those discussions need to continue. They made some changes. They shortened up the trading window. We've heard some good reports on that. They have committed to ensuring price discovery. That's a big part of their business model. So, you know, it remains to be seen how this plays out and CME's role, but I do want to commend them. They have been very active in their response, meeting with folks, interacting certainly with us and our leadership and others across the country. So I think it's something we need to keep building and working on. With regards to the data that's out there, we see a lot of non-negotiated cattle trading. So what does that mean for market pressures? What does that mean for your producers and your communities that are really getting squeezed on? You know, we think that price reporting law should have been modernized. We think the data that was being collected wasn't as accurate that it could have been, and there were some proposals we had in place. We were teed up. There was some opposition, so we couldn't move them forward. But what came out of that was a study that's being conducted by Dr. Joe Parcell and Dr. Glenn Tonser out of Missouri and K-State, respectively. And so they're looking at, they're analyzing this price reporting law, and they're going out in the countryside, and they're talking to producer stakeholder groups. If any of you have an interest in talking to these two individuals, please let me know. And what they'll do is they'll analyze their reports and say, look, this data and the price reporting law, again, we're big supporters. I think the law is a great thing. We just think it needs to be modernized to reflect what's actually happening in the marketplace with a little, look more like a dashboard versus a rearview mirror. Is our goal. So again, we'll work on that, whether it's the upcoming, we'll use that information, look at the upcoming livestock title, reauthorization in 26 through 2020, so 5 years from now. And then as we look at this study and look at this data, we'll also have discussions about the Packers and Stockyards Act. You all know the proposed GPSA rule, clarifications and changes to the Packers and Stockyards Act came out of 2008, a lot of pushback from Congress. And so now you fast forward to whatever came, you know, the proposed rules that came out of there, largely in part, they're looking at still coming up with some stuff out of GPSA, possibly under the last remaining months in the Obama administration, but more than likely, in order to modernize or create definitions within Packers and Stockyards Act, you would need to go through a livestock title. Those discussions are taking place, and again, reflecting of the current market, how do we manage this uncertainty, and we always say by being an informed both policy participant and market participant. It just markets work better in that regard. This slide here and this talking point has been of a bit of interest to me. Again, as we talk about politics and we talk about the current election cycle, so I want to just touch on briefly here. Trade to be or not to be, and so you have Japan. You have the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You have the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. We call these. We go by the acronym so much we can't even say them slower. But so TPP and TTIP. Certainly TPP you have opportunity access to Japan, but also from a cattle producer's perspective, you have New Zealand right there sending quite a bit of exports. We think they might be tapped out given the fact they're an island, but regardless, so both sides of the debate as far as where the support is for TPP, and then of course the opportunity for TTIP, a lot of pressures on being able to change European Union's pushback on GMOs, on antibiotics, and all the above, so better access possibly to EU and all the above. But just so those are currently, the TPP is currently under debate right now, up for consideration, and then TTIP's in the negotiation phase. One of the things that's been just interesting is, you know, no surprise, you see Bernie Sanders rising up through the ranks, teaming up with Labor and all the above to come down very, very hard on these FTAs. what's been really interesting to watch is Trump and the rhetoric he's using to slam on these free trade agreements. What you'll see is a dynamic now of House members in the Republican side and in the Senate that historically supported these trade agreements. That's kind of getting whittled away by Trump's message and rhetoric. So look to see how that plays out in the entire trade arena. We don't have enough time to go into all the details there, but certainly, that's why I say trade to be or not to be. You know that in certain producer crowds in the ag community, some are highly supportive and some aren't. But now you up the ante where you have really large rallies of Sanders and Trump folks railing against trade. It really changes the tone and tenor. So look to see that in the uncertain times. And then again, just a few slides there that we'll click through. And just respect to time, I'll kind of push through here to the end. And again, encourage you all to stay connected. We have our Facebook page, our Twitter page. And then we do a biweekly horn wrap call. It's a free conference call. Just dial in there, first and third Tuesday of the month. And there's the call-in information. And again, all this information will be available at a later time. So with that, I'll take any questions, or we can move on to the next panelist.
All right, Jeff, thanks very much for that real good presentation with a good overview of what's going on. We have time for about one question, and then we'll move on to our next presenter here. So the first question is, considering the 2015 price crash in feeder cattle, they were all calls for congressional inquiry. What's the status of the call for investigation?
So what's the status of the call for investigation? I'm surprised that it's the folks that teed that up, that asked for that investigation, because they made it sound like it was inevitable that it was going to happen. At this time, it's my knowledge, it's not happening. We have been constantly informing Congress about the need to address some of these marketplace mechanisms, these rules and regulations. I don't say regulations, but clarifications in the marketplace. So what we're doing, in fact, I was a little late getting ready for this webinar. We're getting called up to go speak to members of Congress next week to talk a little bit about what is that role. So the answer to that question is, there isn't necessarily a congressional investigation. There's an ongoing dialogue, and I'll say it here, it could lead to a hearing. But I want to make it very clear, we think that some of these definitions and modernizing some of the current rules and regulations would go a lot further to address where we're at right now. And we think that utilizing this possible meetings on the Hill and a possible hearing could help put clarity on that. But we want to be really careful about, causing alarm without saying, here's the response for moving forward and a successful plan for moving forward.
All right, thank you. Now we'll move on to the next question, and Jeff will be on later on in the panel.